You're listening to Surrounded by History, a podcast of the Blue Earth County Historical Society. Produced by Radio Mankato with your host, Historical Society Executive Director Jessica Potter. And now, Surrounded by History.
Hello and welcome to Surrounded by History. I'm your host, Jessica Potter with the Blue Earth County Historical Society. Joining me today is Radio Mankato's Jeff Lang. Each week, this program explores the history all around us, the history in plain sight. Summer is filled with long, hot days at the lake or pool, playing a round of golf or traveling the countryside.
Going to baseball games, barbecuing. Got to be grilling something somewhere in the summer. That counts.
Exactly.
Going on bicycle rides? Motorcycle rides.
There you go. The innovation and popularity of the automobile brought about a major social development in the early 20th century, travel. While people had journeyed across the globe before, it was usually restricted to members of the upper class who had the extra money to do so. But with the availability of automobiles after the turn of the 20th century, thanks to the assembly lines, which made them abundant and affordable, everyday people began to embrace the freedom this transportation offered them, and a concept called tourist camping became a very popular activity. We've talked about this a little in a previous podcast about Highland Park.
That's right.
Unlike early hotels that served mostly railroad passengers, tourist camps evolved along roadways to accommodate the needs of the newly motoring public. In their early days, they typically consisted of standalone structures that looked and functioned like small houses.
Okay.
With as few as four units to rent. Those built during or after World War II were increasingly likely to be under a single roof in the form recognizable today as motels. The word motel is a blend of the words motor and hotel, if you didn't know that.
I figured that. Motels always being smaller than hotels.
Yep.
More roadside based.
Exactly. So it became a very popular term beginning in the 1940s and implied more rooms and greater conveniences to travelers if it was called a motel. Many times camps or motels were also used as housing for returning veterans and their families until they could find permanent housing.
Oh, okay.
One such tourist camp, a.k.a. motel, was called Green Gables Tourist Camp, later known as the Green Gable Motel. The camp or motel is long gone, but it was located near the junction of Highways 68 and 169, just north of Minneopa Golf Course.
Okay.
The camp featured 26 cabins, a shower building, caretaker's home, and an office with a small grocery store. Okay, now that I've given you a little background, in today's Surrounded by History, we are going to hop in the Wayback Machine again. Today we are going to Saturday, August 17th, 1946, location Green Gables Tourist Camp. I had a feeling of the DeLorean was going to come out of your mouth. Like
I was trying not to. I do it every time.
I know.
Don't want to do it every.
I know. I feel like
because there's
we
other
need
time
it.
Machine transportation. We could be getting inside of a phone booth, Bill and Ted style.
That's true. Okay.
But it's totally Rufus.
But buckle up,
okay?
Because it's going to be a bumpy ride. Saturday, August 17th, 1946. It was a hot and humid summer day. The air was thick, heavy, and still. Clouds were building throughout the afternoon, hinting to a break in the weather. Around 6 p.m., the sky darkened. It started to rain. Golf ball-sized hail began to fall, with some larger stones up to a half pound in weight and 9 inches in circumference.
Wow.
Hail came and went. Then 45 minutes later, the sky turned pea green, opened up, and a large tornado dropped to the ground. The tornado first touched down 7 miles southwest of Mankato. Its course swept through 7 farms, sending debris flying in all directions. It was going full tilt, too, when it assaulted Minneopa Golf Club, downing trees and damaging amenities, sending late evening golfers scrambling for cover in ravines and the clubhouse basement. Then it crossed Highway 169. A quarter mile of the principal road was sucked into the tornado's vertex, taking a number of vehicles and their weekending drivers and passengers with it.
Oh, wow.
5 of the 10 deaths and some of the 100 injured represented people casually driving by. They and their ill-fated cars bound for who knows where, in the wrong place at the wrong time. From the highway, the funnel spun its way into and through another highly vulnerable target, Green Gables Cabin Camp, situated where Williams Pipeline Tank Farms presides today.
That's where I was kind of thinking that was going to be.
Eyewitnesses said it appeared that there were two funnel-shaped clouds which met at Green Gables, where the cabins were completely demolished and a dozen autos tossed into the air like toys. There was no warning at all. The tornado caught everyone off guard. The only warning many of the residents had was the sound of the tornado itself. For those not in the path of the deadly storm, they only knew by the shower of small bits of debris and the sound of emergency sirens. No, not weather alert systems at this time, emergency vehicles.
There'd be no early warning systems at all for this.
No.
Wow.
26 individual wooden cabins and a trailer house at Green Gables were torn apart. Two more deaths happened there immediately. Most of the injuries were recorded there as well. Next, a turkey-raising farm adjacent to Green Gables. The farmer died in the same near instant. Even months later, turkeys were found on Minneopa Golf Course.
Oh, my gosh.
The tornado continued its rampage southwest to northeast. Untypically, it did not skip over the lower Minnesota River Valley. It roughed up a few more farms and nicked Sibley Park's trees before ramming into the hillside on the Nicollet County side of the river. There was one last stab at farm buildings and the uprooting of dozens of trees. Then, notoriously unpredictable as funnels always are, it lifted and retreated into the heavy clouds from which it came.
Wow. Let's learn more about this. Surrounded by History continues next.
Welcome back to Surrounded by History. Today we're talking about the 1946 Green Gables tornado. Seconds before, Eldridge Ertman, Lloyd Kleinholz, and their wives had been heading north on Highway 169 from their home in Amboy, going to Waterville. Upon seeing the tornado approaching, they abruptly turned back. But when it disappeared over the hill, they felt safe and decided to continue on to Mankato. They stoically drove around debris and past the devastation of farms. When reaching Green Gables less than a minute later, they were greeted by the sight, by quote, "the sight of utter carnage and injured lying around," end quote. Several blood-covered men pleaded with them to get help. So they snaked around all the road debris, from dead turkeys and splattered chickens to fallen trees, to speed fast as they could to reach a Mankato police station. Just up the road at Louis Mansky's grocery store in La Hillier, Hugo, his nickname is Jigs, Lavin, a Mankato bread truck driver, watched out the window as the monster tornado was barreling right down on them from the west. He screamed at the owner, Mansky, to close the door. At the last second, miraculously, the tornado jumped right over Mansky's store. Lavin, who was driving a truck owned by the Mankato Bread Company, went immediately to Green Gables, and Mansky, the store owner, telephoned city officials.
So it's like Lavin knew that that just came across that area.
Yep. He could tell where it had come from.
Just reading this is just remembering my family's response to the tornado that took out St. Peter and Comfrey back before we got to St. Peter.
Right.
I had a lot of family in St. Peter, and when it happened, we're like, just get in the car and let's go see what we can do to help.
Exactly. And in after the tornado, obviously, this is huge Minnesota news. It's not just local news, but Minnesota news. And so there were a lot of reporters and a lot of documentation of what each of these different people experienced after the event or during the event. And so this next part is actually an account account from Laven through the newspaper reporter asking him questions. But it's his account of what he did next as driving a truck, a Mankato Bread Company truck. So just picture one of those big, you know, bread trucks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Lots of extra space and who knows what he does with the bread. But he tells you what he does next. And so there's a lot of quotes, unquotes, but basically this is his story.
Okay.
Okay. So starting out, quote, when I got there, one man, he's now at Green Gables. When I got there, one man was sorting people who had been injured, Laven said. There were people lying all over the place and they were being set up in windrows. Everyone was lying down or just sitting there on the ground. Firemen and policemen had not yet arrived when Laven drove into the Green Gables area at about 5 minutes to seven. So we talked about this. Now, that tornado hit roughly about 6:45.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, within 10 minutes, you already have people on the scene trying to help.
Mm-hmm.
Laven and two men loaded six of the injured into the bread truck. Quote, we just had to guess who was hurt the worst, he said, because no one knew. We picked up four men and two women and put them crossways on the shelves and bread racks in the back of the truck. We took a boy in the front seat with us. He had a broken arm. End quote. Laven and the other men who were on the scene picked out the persons they thought were most seriously injured from, quote, under cars,
oh my gosh,
in the weeds, and under and around buildings, in, end quote, or wherever they found them. Laven said, I drove about 45 miles an hour coming back into town with one man hanging on the back end of the truck, holding onto the doors and watching the injured. Prior to leaving with the injured, Laven and the other men stopped cars on the highway and directed them to pick up injured persons as well. One of the men brought in by Laven was dead when the truck arrived at the Mankato Hospital. Five other people were unconscious.
Wow.
Laven returned to the scene almost immediately and took a second load of injured, including two men and two women. He returned the third time, but by this time, ambulances and other vehicles had already arrived and the truck was not needed for further transportation of dead and injured. Laven says, I never saw such cooperation. Volunteers didn't ask questions. They just ran up and said, what can I do or tell me what to do? Wires cut down by the tornado were, quote, all over the place, Laven said. Quote, we drove in over a lot of wires. On one trip back to the hospital, we stopped on the way and a fellow cut off about 80 feet of wire caught underneath the truck.
Oh, wow.
End quote. I mean, his description is, he just sounds like such an incredible man to just like jump into action.
Just jump into action, yeah.
And
like he said, he never saw such cooperation. It takes some terrible things to happen for us to always come together, mm-hmm. but that's when we sometimes show our best.
Exactly. In all, the tornado destroyed 26 Green Gables cabins housing more than 50 people. In total, the tornado killed 11 and injured more than 100. It tossed at least a dozen automobiles at Green Gables into the air as if they were plastic children's toys. Mankato's two hospitals, which we've talked about in a previous podcast,
right,
admitted at least 39 victims, stretching the local healthcare system's capacity to its limits. Doctors treated, among others, people with scalp wounds, skull fractures, large lacerations, fractured bones, soft tissue injuries, and severe shock with loss of blood.
Wow.
In the days ensuing, a crowd estimated at 150,000 people drove past to see the devastation firsthand. Remember, I said this was a statewide. Now we're in 1946, so you get news reporters, local, mm-hmm. the newspapers, the Twin City newspapers were down on site reporting about it. And so now all over the state of Minnesota, they know about this devastating
right.
tornado. So you have huge crowds of people coming to drive by to see this devastation.
Always the gawkers. They got to come causing trouble next, right?
Exactly. Well, luckily they didn't because
they didn't cause trouble. They're,
yeah.
they're all over the place. So
right,
it just
right.
made things probably harder to clean up.
Exactly. But remember, even more recently when the St. Peter tornado and the Comfrey tornado, and it was. It was some something to be able to put your own eyes on that devastation.
I mean, if I didn't see the way the towns looked after it happened, you'd never believe it.
Nope, exactly. So what became known as the Green Gables tornado in 1946 overshadowed another devastating twister in Wells that same day, which caused more than $1.5 million in property damage.
Wow.
The reason the Green Gables tornado became more infamous, if you want to say, mm-hmm. was because of the injuries and the death, where the Wells tornado was actually heavy on property damage, but not on loss of life.
Gotcha.
They happened the exact same day, but it's been, it kind of goes down in the record books as the Green Gables tornado, and not necessarily the highlight is the Wells tornado.
Right. Okay.
When it was all over, the Mankato Fire Chief, Mankato Fire Chief said Saturday's tornado was probably the worst ever recorded in the state as far as injury and damage in a particular area. The Green Gable Motel was rebuilt the next year with only 10 cabins this time, not 26. And a little over 10 years later, the Highway 169 expansion took them out. So next time you are heading west on Highway 169 near the junction of Highway 68 and Miniopa Golf Course is on your left, you are on the spot where Green Gables Tourist Camp, a.k.a. Green Gable Motel, once stood. And the site of the deadliest tornado in Blue Earth County history.
Now, good news is that so much things have changed. We have now way more ways to get advanced knowledge. We here in the building, Alex, myself, and a few others are always ready to jump on the air as soon as bad weather's coming. We have a little bit of a heads up. Just at this point also, we kind of can tell by the weather.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've all learned by weather. You can't tell what's going to happen.
Right.
But it's crazy to think about no warning coming down and things like that.
No. And, you know, I did talk to somebody that lived in town during the tornado, and she said they had no idea except that the sky turned a really weird pea green. That's how she described it. It was a really that I've read their accounts, it was a really hot and heavy, humid day. Everybody had been at the lake or wherever they could be to cool off.
Oh, it's always on a day like that, right?
Exactly.
It's always
on
a day where you just had maybe the best day you've had all summer so far because it's been beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts to cool off and that weather changes and that's what happens.
And that's when it collides.
And it's interesting to talk about it and read about this stuff because no warning, no heads up, and here it is.
Right.
And then the way everybody just, you could have been in downtown Mankato, and like you said, no clue. So nope. It's kind of dark out that way, huh?
Exactly. So how they knew, they talked to one of the articles I read mentioned that even in like Lincoln Park, they knew something had happened because they started seeing debris.
Oh, wow.
Coming down in that area. Just even more like, I'm picturing not big pieces of debris, but, you know, the lighter debris that can kind of float mm-hmm. through the air. And then obviously all of the emergency vehicles and the sirens from
that town. Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of gave you that idea that, okay, something big has happened here.
Something just happened. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not quite like the movie Twister.
Nope.
Where you have tractors falling from the sky.
Nope.
But there's definitely trees, turkeys in this case, and
yes.
things like that, that just, by this point, what do cars weigh? In the 1940s,
yeah,
it wasn't much to them, I'm just guessing.
I can't imagine.
And so they probably did get flipped around just like nothing.
Right.
So
there was one report about one of the couples staying at the at Green Gables were newlyweds. And needless to say, one of the newlyweds didn't make it from this tornado. But there was talk about the other one was they had traveler's checks for their wedding, for their honeymoon mm-hmm. to go traveling. And the traveler's checks were found embedded into the running board of a vehicle.
Oh, wow.
So that's a piece of paper.
Right, right.
A piece of paper there's a lot of description about the damage and the carnage and the destruction and the odd things. There was another one that reported that, you know, complete destruction, but then up in the tree on a hanger was a dress.
Just still on the hanger.
Still on the hanger,
yeah.
Just hanging.
It is so interesting. There's a telephone pole, half of one, in my aunt's kitchen. it didn't come. It came through the window because there's no holes in the wall. So it came through the window, but just half a telephone pole in the kitchen. Like, yeah. That's what happened for them. So,
yeah.
So like you, all this, like you said, had mentioned, you know, thankfully we have a lot of incredible weather alert systems we can do now with sirens and media announcements, including right here on KTOE that we can use to help
exactly.
out.
Exactly. So as the weather changes and turns and does some weird stuff this summer, I encourage everyone to turn right here to KTOE and get the latest on any weather updates. We sure hope that you enjoyed today's program as we explored the history of the 1946 Green Gables tornado. All of the information we shared today comes from the archives of the Blue Earth County Historical Society. If you want to know more on this topic, come on down to the Historical Society, and there's a ton of information. There's also a book called Unique Mankato Stories that's available at the Blue Earth County History Center, which also has more of an account of this event in history. All of this, we sure hope that you will take the time to see the history that surrounds you.
You've been listening to Surrounded by History, a podcast from the Blue Earth County Historical Society, produced by Radio Mankato. For more information on this and other topics, visit BlueEarthCountyHistory.com or stop by the Blue Earth County History Center at 424 Warren Street in Mankato. Thanks for listening to Surrounded by History.